Welcome to our first podcast of 2024. We had a busy end to 2023 with the release of our annual report, The Strategic Estimate 2024. I hope you guys are all reading it and enjoying it. After taking a break for a few weeks, we're now getting back into fifth gear. So there's been a lot going on in the world, and we struggled to come up with a podcast topic with all the different issues. So we thought instead we would have an open Q&A podcast where we could look at multiple different geopolitical issues. We've asked you guys on our social media platforms to send in your questions and we will attempt to answer it. And here to help me look at them all is Geopolity founder Adnan Khan. How are you keeping, Adnan? A nice warm welcome for our first podcast in 2024.
Yeah, good to be here again, Yusuf. It's funny, you're saying it's our first podcast of 2024. I think just in a few days we'll be in February, so we'll be well into 2024.
Yeah, 29th of January at the moment of recording. So I know that a lot can change before this podcast is released. So first topic, it's constantly on the news, Palestine. We've now gone past 100 days since the events of 7th of October and the subsequent Israeli assault. A lot has happened. Could you give us an update of where things currently stand?
So yeah, Yusuf, not so long ago, we went past 100 days of the conflict or massacre taking place in Palestine. So there's probably a couple of key developments. Probably the most important development, Yusuf, is 100 days, 3 months in, Israel doesn't look any closer to victory. There's no indicator that Israel can latch onto and say victory is in sight. If you take your mind back to Iraq, George W. Bush standing on an aircraft carrier with a banner at the back, mission accomplished, the fall of Baghdad, the fall of the statue of Saddam Hussein, none of that's actually happened. In fact, what we're seeing is the massacre to genocide of Gaza. And actually, victory doesn't look like it's in sight at all. So despite the death of over 25,000 people, Hamas has not been degraded. They're still fighting. There's obviously concerns with people regarding what's going on in the Red Sea and around Yemen, which I'm sure we're going to discuss. You've had the death of a couple of American soldiers at a base, Jordan. And in fact, what it looks as though potentially it could be spreading. So obviously, what we've seen for the last 3 months is death and destruction. And we've seen this very blasé attitude of Israel. What we've also seen, Yusuf, is the credibility of Israel is really slipping away. For a long time, many people believed Israel was created for the victims of the Holocaust. People felt the victims of the Holocaust deserved their own nation state. And despite tensions with the indigenous people, people felt some sort of agreement needs to be made so these two people can live with each other. And what came up was the two-state solution. And for a long time, Israel was considered the peaceful neighbor who wanted to live in peace, whilst the Palestinians were the aggressors. And really, public opinion has completely shifted the other way. Because of social media, people have seen through this. The genocidal statements, one after the other, by Israeli leaders really shows you that the problem is the Israeli leadership. So from a public opinion side, Israel's done a poor job and really whatever ounce of credibility it had left is slipping. On the battlefield, there's no sign that victory is in sight. And then this ruling by the International Criminal Court, the ICJ, that doesn't really help, which I'm sure we're going to discuss. So on the battlefield, despite Israel's atrocities and genocidal war, really 3 months in, there's no indicator that they're about to win. The war's coming to an end. If anything, the message Israeli leaders are putting out is this is going to go on to 2025, 2026, which doesn't bode well for Israel. If you remember, this is a US invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan again. It's going to be a short war. We've got all the military power. But 20 years later, they left humiliated.
Now, you brought up the ICJ and it's given its interim ruling. There's been mixed reception about their ruling. What does it mean? What impact will it have on the situation and the direction of the war?
So I think the reason why there's skepticism, even in the question, Yusuf, is obviously the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, it doesn't really have any teeth. It can come up with a judgment, But it relies on the United Nations Security Council to implement that judgment. And all the members of the UN Security Council, the main ones, the French, the British, the Americans, they've been completely on the side of Israel in public. That is, in private, we can discuss this, actually being a bit of a different story. So I think there's two things there. Firstly, Yusuf, the fact that this court case is even happening is unique, because what this means is a country, which in this case happens to be South Africa, and that's something quite unique, the country that was a victim of an apartheid system, they've taken another country to court claiming that they're an apartheid state and they're carrying out a genocide. So Israel can't just slap this away. This is not Palestinians who are anti-Semitic. This is South Africa. And South Africa doesn't have a horse in this race. South Africa doesn't gain anything in this at all. They're not on the side of the Palestinians per se, neither on the side of Israel. But obviously they've been victims. And that's why Israel, despite its claims that this is absurd, there's no case here, they had to send lawyers. They had to go and stand trial. In the end, Yusuf, I'm actually quite shocked the verdict was 15-2. My calculations were around 6 judges definitely would vote against Israel. And the rest, I couldn't say. The fact that 15 did is virtually unanimous. And the two that didn't is quite interesting, because you had an Israeli judge, who Norman Finkelstein, I'll quote, who said that he's somewhere in between the character from that film, My Cousin Vinny, and a used car salesman. So he didn't give him any credibility. And then the Ugandan judge, her whole country abandoned her now. The Ugandan government have abandoned her. And actually, Norman Finkelstein said that her write-up, he doesn't believe she wrote it. So in the end, what the judgment said is, and this is an interim ruling, Yusuf, because it's going to take years to actually look at all the evidence. What they're saying is, potentially, there could be a genocide. So at the moment, they ordered Israel to check and monitor their soldiers who are potentially committing the genocide. And secondly, that they should let humanitarian aid go in. So what the ICJ has said in the interim ruling, that there potentially is a case for genocide, so the court case will go on. So from that perspective, it's actually quite a damning judgment. But the fact that the court didn't call for a ceasefire or call for a halt, so to tell Israel there may be a claim or there may be a genocide taking place, well, there is a genocide taking place and they're the ones committing it. So that obviously upset a lot of people. However, Yusuf, Israel's credibility has hit rock bottom. An independent court made up of some eminent judges around the world, they have said that there is potentially a genocide case to call for. And, you know, let me put this into perspective, Yusuf. This is a country that was created by victims of the Holocaust. How have we got into a scenario where they are in court for committing potentially a genocide? And that's why, you know, Israel's credibility and, you know, it was shocking, actually, Yusuf, if you look at how Israel fought this case. They were very arrogant. They were laughing at some of the claims being made. What South Africa did is they put a very good case forward, and it was a legal case. They just focused on the legality. They didn't talk about processes, procedures. It seemed what Israel was doing is, we're going to talk to the global audience here. We're going to focus on that. So actually, a lot of Israel's arguments legally have no standing. Most of the arguments they raise have no legal standing at all.
What about the impact on the actual direction of the war? Would the ICJ ruling actually affect that?
So no, you know, Yusuf, it's a bit like, if you're going to pass judgment, but you've got no way to put people into prison, then what impact will it have? So I don't think it'll have an impact on the physical battlefield reality. However, you know, wars, Yusuf, are not just on the battlefield. There's the information war, the propaganda war, and that has a big impact. Because what will happen is this is the first time, Yusuf, in 70 years, an international body is actually saying Israel potentially has a genocide case to answer for. This is a country that's always blamed Palestinians. They don't want peace. They're terrorists. They're extremists. They commit 7th October. And for the first time in Israeli history, they're in the dock. So they can't just back this off. They can't just like ridicule this. This is a coup, yeah? Now, I don't think it will have an impact on the battlefield reality, but on the propaganda war, it will. So what this means, Yusuf, for example, if they get found guilty of committing genocide, now, probably nothing's going to get implemented. But what can happen is individuals or groups in America, France, Germany, and Britain, they can go to court and say, we are taking the government to court because they're supplying arms to a genocidal nation. And legally, that will stand. That is the impact it can have. So from a propaganda information war perspective, potentially in the long run, from a legal perspective, can have impact. I don't think it will affect. In fact, we've seen already, Yusuf, it seems to deal with this ruling day after Israel has accused a United Nations agency of having workers who took part in the 7th of October attack. Yeah? I mean, surprise, surprise. Yeah? All of a sudden, they've come out of nowhere. So, you know, from this perspective, it can have an impact.
One question I had is, do you know the ICJ itself, do you feel like that institution and the UN, they have lost their credibility with this ruling? Because I feel like a lot of people feel like they've been let down by their ruling.
So, you know, Israel was not the only one on trial here. International law was on trial. International institutions were on trial. Because when the Holocaust happened and the settlement after World War II, what was said was never again. We can't allow this to happen. So a whole global liberal order, Yusuf, international law, the United Nations was established to make sure this doesn't happen. But what's happening, Yusuf, is the genocides being televised live. You know, this literally is, Yusuf, it's a WMD moment again. What side of history do you want to be on? Barack Obama was one of very few politicians who stood against the Iraq war when it was considered unpatriotic. And when he stood for election, that was one of the main arguments against Hillary Clinton. So, you know, America went to war in Iraq. It lied. It became obvious it lied. And Iraq is a complete disaster today. So many people ended up on the wrong side of history. What's going on here is, what side of history do you want to be on? What side of history does the ICJ want to be on? I think you're right. People were disappointed because they didn't go as fast for the ceasefire. But the ceasefire would have been, there is definitely a genocide taking place and a ceasefire is the only way to stop it. They've left it open by saying potentially there might be a genocide to call for. And therefore, there needs to be more inquiry. So you're absolutely right. International law, international institutes are on the line here. If these institutes cannot stop a genocide, what use are they? And remember, these institutes have already taken a battering because of what America did in Iraq and Afghanistan. So potentially, use of these institutions and the global order we have, it may potentially be on their final legs because they're useless. And if you're Chinese or if you're Russian, you're licking your lips here. You've got the potential to easily replace this order with another order, but no one gives them any credibility to them.
It seems Israel is working against the US plan for the region, and it seems to be doing many things independent of the US, even though the US is the power that's backing them. What's going on here? I would have thought that the US would be able to actually keep them in line.
So, Yusuf, what this comes down to is the Israeli-American relationship is not a black and white relationship. Although you're right, America is a superpower and Israel is subordinate to America. However, what you find is there are other elements to this relationship. So it's election year this year. Biden is not in a strong position. It will not do Biden's electoral prospects any good if he is seen to be cutting funding to Israel, if he is seen not defending Israel. However, by defending Israel, he is having a major impact on the Democratic support base who feel America has been doing too much for Israel. Now, what doesn't help America is the Israelis are being very open on their agenda, their genocidal agenda, their agenda. I mean, Netanyahu said last week, from the river to the sea, there cannot be two states. There can only be one because Israel needs one state for security. So he's basically saying, forget two-state solution, forget a Palestinian state. And we know how the Israelis treat the Palestinians under their authority. They run an apartheid state. They discriminate against non-Jews and they privilege the Jews that actually lived there. So these differences are becoming more and more pronounced. And the Zionist leadership, Yusuf, in Israel, they've never wanted two states. They want to dominate the whole of historic Palestine and more. But because they're a weak nation, because they're an artificial nation, and because they need American funding and support, what you find is they've been paying lip service to it. And how do they do that? They go to meetings, they agree to two states, but then they build settlements. Every 5 years or so, they mow the lawn. They carry out a massacre to put back any hope of Palestinian nationhood. Netanyahu in the past has been on record, Yusuf, of saying he's funded and supported the emergence of Hamas, but he wants to divide the Palestinians. So this is why you're now seeing, and then Israelis are actually quite arrogant about this. They're being very arrogant about it. And that's why you're seeing the differences are becoming more and more pronounced between them.
Now, if we look at the situation, although the West, America in particular, they didn't want an escalation, we see an escalation happening. So the US and the UK, they've started to bomb Yemen. We actually see an escalation of the war. So we see now the Houthis have actually started to attack ships in the Red Sea. What's their relationship to this whole situation?
So it's quite straightforward, Yusuf. The Houthis say that Israel's committing a genocide against Muslims of Gaza, and America, France, and Britain are giving them cover. And the Muslim rulers have let the Muslims of Palestine down. So they said, we're going to do something about it. What they said is they are going to stop and halt all ships that are going to Israel. So ships that are Russian, that are Chinese, that originally were American, British, they had no problem with. Now, what America's done is it was afraid Israel might launch strikes against Yemen. And Israel's done this before. So what America's done is rather than Israel does it, it's carried out the strikes to give a warning to the Houthis that things could get worse. But what it's done is it's made sure Israel hasn't done it. If Israel's done it, the whole Muslim world will be up in fire. So in many ways, what America's doing is actually to try and contain what's going on rather than expand it. I know in the news they talk about the wars expanding because they're doing this. Imagine if Israel carried out strikes against Yemen, the Muslim rulers would be in an even more difficult position because all the people in the Muslim world would have said, enough's enough now. The Muslim armies have to move. So that's actually what's going on there. So in a way, this isn't an expansion of the war. This is America trying to contain the actual war to Palestine only.
Now, Adnan, you're saying that the war isn't expanding. It's not involving other nations and regions. But literally just yesterday, we saw the death of three American soldiers in a drone strike in Jordan. What do you make of this?
So it's quite funny, but the Jordanians have tried to deny it. They said it was in Syria, when clearly America has a base in Jordan next to the Syrian border, and it got attacked. We don't actually know who attacked it, Yusuf, because I don't think we can trust Joe Biden. He's blamed it on Iran, even though the Pentagon has been saying that since the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, Qasem Soleimani used to control a lot of these groups across the region. A lot of these groups now are working on their own authority and doing what they want. So they're attacking Israeli and American targets. So this is officially from the Pentagon. But Biden's come out and he said that these are groups that Iran is supporting. The thing you've got here is remember, Israel's carrying out a massacre. Israel, during the last 3 months, have actually done strikes in Syria and Iraq as well. America's been doing strikes in Iraq as well. America occupied Iraq for over a decade and completely messed the country up. America occupied Afghanistan and caused a mess. What do you think is going to happen when you do these things? What do you think? I mean, to quote one person I heard online, if you're going to be cowboys, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get a blowback. So, you know, what you found here is, you know, America's been doing drone strikes. And also, you know, the Americans have come across indifferent. You've got a genocide going on and they just shrugged their shoulders. No, this, no, there's no genocide. Israel has the right to defend itself. The whole world can see what's going on here. And you hear the American official spokesman every day. American official just shrugged their shoulders like, no, there's no genocide going on. We can't see any genocide going on. So, you know, these things are going to happen. What you're going to find is the groups in the Middle East, maybe even soldiers in the army, they're going to react because they see a massacre going on. So that's really what you've had happening. Now, we don't know who did it. Yeah, we can't trust what the Americans are saying. They're a participant in the war. And actually, it makes Biden look weak. It's election year. And already, what's Donald Trump's election campaign? His election campaign previously and now is, we've wasted our money abroad. We've wasted our troops abroad. We don't need a massive army because when they're out of harm's way, this is what happens. So he's arguing we need to bring the troops on because there's no point in them being across the world. American troops are being killed. This doesn't make Biden look good, does it? It makes him look weak on security and actually makes him look weak on decision-making. Because if these troops weren't there, they wouldn't have died. So obviously the image Biden's going to try and make now is we've been attacked. It's a terrorist attack. The problem is just, it's just laughable. No one takes that seriously anymore. It's like every criticism of Israel is now accused of being anti-Semitic. And, you know, it gets to a point where, when you say it becomes laughable, because that's just your argument for everything. Like, even valid criticism, when everyone can see it, you know, you just brush it off. So, as you said, Yusuf, this happened yesterday. We're recording on the Monday the 29th. So the information and the details quite scarce at the moment. Obviously, more will come out. But if you're going to be cowboys in the region, you're going to get a blowback.
How come we've not seen any intervention by the Muslim nations in the Middle East who have considerably more resources than the Houthis?
So, the question is absolutely spot on. If the Houthis have impacted the global economy, they've impacted global trade using rubber dinghies. You know, they're not, even their missiles, Yusuf, are very old and very crude. Largely, they've been using rubber dinghies and intercepting ships. So this is the actions of a nation that have been in war for over a decade. They've been bombed back to the Stone Ages by Saudi Arabia. Where are the Muslim rulers? And what you've had with the Muslim rulers, Yusuf, is they never planned to intervene when it came to Palestine. They spoke out for Palestine because that's what public opinion was in the Muslim world. They wanted to be seen to be in line with the sentiments of the people. However, their throne, their rule is more important to them than Palestine. So if they intervene now, this will bring them into direct conflict with America. And they don't want that. They want to maintain their thrones. And they have now been exposed for all to see. Erdogan, Sisi, Jordan, all the Muslim rulers that you should talk out for Palestine, they've all been exposed now because nobody wants their words anymore. People want to see their actions. And, you know, you mentioned that they've got Christians with more resources. Absolutely. They've actually got the resources to hurt Israel, to bring this to an end, to threaten Israel. 50% of Israel's oil, Yusuf, is coming through Turkish pipelines. Saudi Arabia, in the 1973 war, they did an oil embargo on the Western countries. So really, this has exposed the Muslim rulers. And, you know, fundamentally, Yusuf, the rulers are there for themselves. They're there for their own thrones. When they speak out for the Muslim world generally, when they speak out for Muslim issues, this is really just to deal with public opinion in their countries, never to actually deliver on it.
And one final question on this topic before we move on. In the last few days, we've seen funding to the UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. Their funding has been stopped by America, the UK, Germany, Australia, and I think a couple of other countries, because there may have been some people within Gaza who were part of the 7th of October attacks. What do you make of this? Is it true? The reaction of the West, what does it show us?
Really, what's happened, Yusuf, is Israel has made an allegation. It's an allegation that comes from Israel's intelligence services. So in any case where someone makes an allegation, what happens is you investigate and you then publish your findings. That's not what's happened here. The day after the ICJ ruling, when public opinion is completely turning against Israel, the day after Israel's come up with this, so the timing is questionable. And the UNRWA have actually sacked those individuals without even investigating it yet. They've sacked them and now they're going to investigate it, which doesn't make sense because as far as I know, you are innocent until proven guilty. So what's actually happened here is, if you've sacked them, what are you going to investigate? I don't work for you anymore. You've sacked me. I don't need to talk to you anymore. So I think the timing is highly questionable. To be honest, so obviously what this organization does, Yusuf, is they deal with the relief effort and humanitarian aid that goes into Gaza. So there are 30,000 workers. And what Israel has done, and with support of these countries that have cut funding, is they've tarnished the reputation of the whole organization. And it's really funny, you know, the genocidal statements that were made by Israeli officials. The Israeli judge argued this was just a few bad apples. The rest of the Israeli government's okay. That's actually what he said. Here, they've tarnished the whole organization. So I think the timing is highly questionable. Nothing's been proven at all. Yeah, we don't even know what the evidence is. So from that perspective, now look, at the end of the day, it's possible anyone in any organization that goes into Gaza potentially could have been part of 7th of October. Yeah, that absolutely is possible. But we haven't seen the evidence. And until the investigation is not finished, any accusations are exactly that. They're accusations and all individuals are innocent until proven guilty.
Let's move on to another subject, Adan. So there is another war going on, the war in Ukraine. We are fast approaching the two-year anniversary, and it seems like the West has lost interest in this war. There's been a lot of talk recently about a future war with Russia and the West. Is there any truth to this?
So Ukraine's interesting, Yusuf. What are we now? 29th. So I think the 22nd of February was when Russia invaded. So we're not too far now from the two-year anniversary. And in a nutshell, Yusuf, what's happened is Russia had a really bad start to the war. And the West got really hopeful, thinking Russia's finished, Russia's out, and Ukraine's won. And what happened was Russia adapted, it made changes, it called more troops, and Ukraine has struggled to make any progress. So Ukraine famously carried out a counter-attack last year, and that's been a complete failure. So over Christmas, Yusuf, Western leaders have started to talk that they don't really see how Ukraine's going to win that. In fact, since the war started in Gaza, Ukraine's been forced to shift some of the ammunition they received and weapon they received over to Israel. So the West are losing interest now. The economic war didn't work. Russia is standing. In fact, Russia's doing even better. Russia's actually now replaced the West with China and India as a market. And still, Yusuf, Putin hasn't thrown the 300,000 mobilized troops into the war yet. So nearly 2 years on, Yusuf, Russia's on top. Russia's looking strong. If Russia decided to take the rest of Ukraine, the West would have a massive problem on their hands because Ukraine has no capability to withstand that. So not surprisingly, Yusuf, there's now talk of Ukraine needs to now start negotiating with Russia. Ukraine needs to try and get a deal. So 20% of Ukraine now is occupied by Russia, and there's no way Ukraine's going to get that back. Any talks, Yusuf, Ukraine is in the position of weakness. They're not in the position of strength. So surprise, surprise, this week, NATO and the West have started talking up about a potential future war with Russia, World War III. So you're finding the European nations are all saying, after two or three decades of cutting their military budget, relying on NATO, there potentially could be a war on the European continent, a European-wide war, world war. And therefore, where are we all? And no country in Europe is in a position to be in a long-term land war like we saw with World War I and World War II. So there's lots of talk now of military budgets going up. There's lots of talk now about conscription. Here in the UK, there's talk that we need citizen armies. And this is laughable because the performance of European armies in the last two decades around the world has been abysmal. And the various inquiries that I've done have shown that in Iraq and Afghanistan, most of the Western armies didn't even have sufficient resources to fight these wars. So really, Yusuf, the future of the world's powers and Europe is looking very bleak at the moment. Effectively, there's two called World War III. We are technically due a world war, which always starts in Europe. It's been, 70 years plus now. And, you know, all the wars, there were tensions between powers. So you've got Russia on one side, you've got the Europeans and the West on the other side. You've got the allies of Russia, China on the other side. This is how the war started. You know, in the past, it was the Germans versus the Russians and the French. Now you've got the Russians versus the other European powers. So all the fundamental reasons historically that have led to continent-wide wars, they are there really at the moment. And all you need really is World War I, the catalyst was the assassination of the heir to the throne in Bosnia. And that spread then became a European-wide war. And World War II was really a rerun of World War I. The Germans tried to achieve what they failed to do in World War I. So the competition between the European powers is still there. And, you know, it is possible. I mean, we're in 2024, Yusuf. A year ago, you had a war in Ukraine. It had become a stalemate. There was no war in Palestine. And what people see is war in the Middle East, which could spread. You've got war in Europe where it could spread. There's tension in the Far East now with a new government in Taiwan that's anti-China. So people are worried. And what governments seem to be doing in the West is really preparing the ground now, which is they're talking about we've got a pre-war generation who never experienced warfare. There are people alive today, Yusuf, who were born after 9/11. They've only seen their country at war, but they've never participated in the war. So that's really what's going on there. You know, Ukraine is not looking good for the West, and the future is looking quite bleak for them.
America has an upcoming election in November, and it seems like Donald Trump, he seems to have won the Republican nomination What will this mean if he goes on to win the US elections in November?
So you're absolutely right, Yusuf. The election due in November in America is looking like a rerun of the last election. There's only been two rounds of primaries for the Republicans, which Trump won outright. So the first one in Iowa saw the end of Vivek Ramaswamy, and it saw the end of Ron DeSantis. And then the one in New Hampshire saw Trump win again. And everyone's saying Nikki Haley's done, although she's saying she's going to fight. But it looks as though he's got the Republican nomination in the bag. So really, the only way to stop him now legally, he's got, I think, in total, 8 cases on the go. But all of these cases, Yusuf, none of them are going to be resolved by Election Day in November. So unless they can do him on a criminal charge where he's got to go to prison, I think 2 of them are criminal, but none of these will be done by election time. Well, this whole polarization in America, it's revealing a number of things. It really shows you that America has got to a point where they divided right down the middle. There are some major differences in the country on the direction of the country. So the whole Republican Party has been hijacked by Trump. It is the Donald Trump Party now. He is their beat. He is their messiah. He is going to take them to the promised land. And they don't care what they hear. He's the man that's actually protecting them. So he's going to win the nomination. In fact, the Republicans fought. Legally, they could stop him. And even that's looking unlikely as well. So now you're finding a lot of Republicans are coming out in support for him because writing's on the wall now. However, Yusuf, the election with Biden is a bit tricky. Biden is the oldest US president. He's going to be 85 by the end of the next term if he wins it. Everybody believes he's not going to last the whole term. He's probably going to pass away. That would mean Kamala Harris, the vice president, takes over, who's even more hated. So there are many people who don't like Biden because he's too old. And there are then many people who don't like Trump because of everything he's done in the past and his support for the right. So this presents an interesting scenario. America's got significant domestic issues to deal with. How can America be dealing with foreign issues when it's got so many significant problems at home? So this election, Yusuf, will have a major impact on America's global position. Trump is already saying when he wins, it will be retribution. He's going after everyone that's wronged him and everyone that's tried to stop his electoral machine. So definitely going to be interesting to watch. But America's not looking good. America was already lost a war in Afghanistan. The Taliban are back in power. His Middle East adventures are you're seeing the results of it now. Credibility of America and its credibility to do good is completely gone down the drain. And with these elections now, it's looking even worse. At the moment, Yusuf, Texas is arguing with the central government, the Biden administration, that they are being invaded by Mexicans. And the central government isn't doing anything. So Texas is thinking of seceding, becoming a state on its own and dealing with this invasion. That is where America is at the moment.
So there's a few other, well, there's several elections going on this year, but I wanted to get your view on some in particular. So first of all, Pakistan next month.
Yeah, probably the most pointless election. Everyone knows Nawaz Sharif is going to win. Or the army leadership has got rid of Imran Khan. He's in prison. They've completely destroyed his party. All his senior members have left. And that's opened the door to Nawaz Sharif. Nawaz Sharif will be back in. I'm not sure why they need to even have an election for that. I would give it a year, Yusuf. I think significant problems are already there, economic. They've given the economy effectively to the IMF. I think within a year, he'll have problems straight away. And Nawaz Sharif, Yusuf, has been in power 3 times and never finished a term. And I don't think he's going to finish a 4th term. So,
as pointless as the election the month after in Russia?
Probably. So I think the important thing to understand about Russia is dominated by the security establishment. So this is all the people that lost out after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So the Soviet Union collapsed, the KGB, the Secret Service, the military lost their influence. Boris Yeltsin came in. He created a new class of technocrats, Western-leaning politicians. And Putin, who was from the KGB, when he managed to get to power in 1999, he then reversed that. So what you've got is a security class with the state, and they've got a political party, and they use elections to show legitimacy to the people. That's what's going on there. So this is not an election to elect new people. Really, elections are used by the regime to claim legitimacy. So in 2000, I think it was 2019, Yusuf, constitutional amendments were made where the next leader can do 2 terms of 6 years. So it reset all the terms that they had. So Putin potentially could now be in power for another 12 years. So I think, you know, the important thing for this election really was, with Ukraine going on, how much would it be impacting the people? But Russia's winning in Ukraine. There's not been an impact on the economy. So I can't really see any major changes there.
And finally, India, the largest democracy in the world.
Yes, the largest democracy in the world, probably also the one of the most racist countries in the world at the moment, and probably the one of the most corrupt countries in the world as well. I say that because this label of largest democracy always gets connected to India. And then, you know, if we're going to give them labels, let's label them with everything. What you've got in India is a BJP party, Yusuf, who completely dominate the political spectrum. Modi is their messiah. And the opposition is completely divided and so weak that there's nothing they can actually do. So last week, Yusuf, the Babri Mosque in Ayodhya, they built a temple there now. And that was inaugurated and all the Bollywood actors and all the senior figures had to come and support it. So I can't see any major changes happening. Modi's got this in the bag. And Modi's strategy is 2 things. He's trying to attract foreign investment. He's trying to digitalize the country. But then he's also using Hindu nationalism to unite people behind him. A very lethal cocktail. And I don't see any change there in the April and May elections.
Okay. One question we received was regarding Canada and why Canada is using the Khalistani issues against India.
Okay, so over the years, many people migrated from India out to other countries. So many Sikhs from Punjab in India, they went to Canada, set up there. You've got a large Sikh community there. And the Sikhs were accused of assassinating one of the Gandhis, I think in the 80s. And as a result, there was a massacre of Sikhs. And since then, there's been a Sikh movement that's been calling for separatism in Punjab, so the Khalistan movement. So some of the leaders of this group, they migrated when things got really bad and went to Canada. And in Canada, they've been raising finance. They've been organizing themselves. So what actually happened last year, Yusuf, we know now, is the Modi government sent assassins to go and take out the leader of one of the leading figures of the separatist group in Canada. And he passed away. And actually, America gave this intelligence to the Canadians that this happened. So since then, there's been a bit of a spat. I mean, if you think about it, foreign government has come to your country and assassinated effectively someone who's a Canadian citizen. So that's why Canada has turned against India. And that's why Canada and India, obviously, relation between them are rock bottom. It's similar to, Yusuf, you know, when every once in a while the KGB take out a former KGB officer in the UK and Britain see that as a murder on their soil. And that's why you see relations like hit rock bottom between Russia and Britain. So yeah, that's really what's happened there. Are you still on mute, bro?
Sorry.
You're back now.
We get asked this question all the time, so it would be a nice question to end on. Who controls the world, Adnan?
So that's a very good question, which I'm not going to answer at the moment. And the reason why is we have a series coming up on this. And you're absolutely right. We get this question, I think it's come my way so many times on our social media, on our X feed and Instagram. This is probably one of the most popular questions. We are writing an article on this at the moment where we're going to address this. And the article should be out in a couple of weeks. When the article comes out, we'll actually sit down with the author and do a podcast and actually go into a lot more detail about this. So yeah, if you could just wait for a couple of weeks, we will really address this with all the details that a lot of people seem to be demanding.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolitics.com. You can learn more about many other issues accessing our website. You'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.